Welcome to Blether Together, brought to you by Farmstrong Scotland. I'm your host, Sarah Stephen, and together we'll be travelling across Scotland to chat to farmers and crofters to learn more about them, their businesses, challenges, and the positive steps they take to manage their well-being. Our thanks go to NFU Mutual Charitable Trust for supporting the podcast series and to our founding funders, Movember and the Royal Highland Agricultural Society of Scotland.
In this special edition of Blether Together and online webinar, I speak to Kirsty Ritchie. Kirsty is a psychotherapist and co-founder of Mind and Mission. We discuss the importance of reframing the negative so that you can have positive well-being, and that actually with some new thinking and a change in the way in which you approach activities on farm and crop, you can support your own well-being. We learn more about the 12 different thought distortions that can impact the way in which you act on farm and crop, and we also find out why we both very much love cooking more than the washing up. Kirsty, a very warm welcome to our webinar today talking about mindset.
Thank you very much, Rebecca.
So Kirsty, before we get going, we're doing a bit of a quick fire round question. The first thing that comes into your head, so we'll see what you come up with. So if you're game, I will throw some questions at you.
Absolutely.
Beaches or Monroe?
Beaches.
Spring or winter?
Oh, spring.
Sunrise or sunset?
Sunrise.
Books or films?
Films.
Cooking or the washing up?
It's a rule in our house. I cook, someone else cleans up.
If you had a superpower, would it be flying or would it be teleporting?
Teleporting.
Past or future?
Future.
And fixed or growth?
Definitely growth.
Which leads us nicely on to today's topic, mindset. One of the things we've been looking at through Farmstrong is how to change your mindset and what is mindset. To get us started, Kirsty, I know it's a lot of work that you've been doing through Mind and Mission. What is mindset?
Knowing that mindset was the topic, it was the first question that I sort of thought about in my own head. How do you define mindset? I think if you look anywhere, when you talk about mindset theory, it will come up with fixed versus growth. And I think that in sort of corporate sense, in my old background, that made a lot of sense. But where I am now as a therapist, when I think of mindset, and bizarrely, actually, very recently, I can't even remember what I was watching, but there was a quote, and it was a Shakespeare quote, and I just jotted it down, and it said, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." That really resonates for me. So when I think about mindset, I think about fixed and growth, but I also think about it's the language that we think, if that makes sense. That's how my mind sort of almost deciphers it, the language that we think. It's a process of how our daily thoughts set our intentions and our behaviours.
That daily thought, you know, in farming and crofting, you never know quite what's coming at you. No 2 days are the same. It's like a lot of industries. But how do you prepare yourself when you don't know what's coming for that positive mindset that you might need to tackle those challenges?
I think that even in itself, there's a couple of parts to that. One is tackling uncertainty. Mm-hmm. So our mind doesn't like change. It likes stability. It likes continuity. All of that. So I guess in terms of farming, agriculture, crofting, it is a constant changing environment where, you know, even the weather can change how your day is going to go. And I think we need to, first of all, acknowledge that our mind doesn't like change, so that it will always put up a fight. And by put up a fight, I mean it will resist uncertainty. It will resist difficulty. And our mind throws us so many different things when we're resisting change, when we're resisting uncertainty. So that's the first bit. We need to acknowledge that. We need to have that education and understanding of what happens when we're up against it, you know, whether it's uncertainty or change. The other part you said there about changing to a positive mindset, this might be controversial, but I'm not sure we always have to change it. So it might not be where I always sit. And yes, I think there's lots of things we can do to keep positive. But when things are really tough, we need to connect what's going on with our mind and our body and our hearts and everything else around us. We need to sense the whole of our being. And if we're trying to constantly push down or push to one side or avoid or, you know, not think about negatives or not think about difficult times or uncertainties or change, then we're not really acknowledging the whole of us. You know, at the end of the day, life can be difficult. And, you know, more often than not, at some point during the day, we will have a moment. You know, there will be something challenging, something difficult, something negative. And I think it's about acknowledging that as well, being able to say, this is really hard, or I'm feeling really uncertain just now. And wow, that just hit me. And that's feeling really tough. Even to our kids, you know, to be able to say, do you know, I'm having a really challenging day today and I'm feeling it. It's not about sitting in that, but it's that, first of all, being able to acknowledge that sometimes our days are really tough and that's okay too.
And that, I think, Kirsty, is quite a difficult one for some people, isn't it? You know, actually showing their emotions and saying, I'm not feeling great, it's pretty rubbish today. So how do you change the mindset, or how do you train the mind to know that it's acceptable to have those conversations? Is that just habit? Is it surrounding yourself with good people? Is the particular things that you should be doing?
It's all of the above. I talk a lot with one-to-one clients around living in your own reality. I think the challenge in today's world is we live in a world where it's a 24/7, everything is at your fingertips, and we see life being played out in so many different ways, and we can't help but follow and compare. I suppose feel this sense of we should be, you know, I must, I have to, I should, instead of just I am. You know, this is where my life is, and this is what I enjoy, and this is how I want to live. So I think part of a healthy mindset is a mixture of I feel it when things are difficult and I acknowledge it and I allow myself, I give myself permission to sit with that, but I also allow myself this resilience to pick myself up when things are difficult and see the positives. I can accept that. I can accept where I am. And that's what self-awareness is. And that's where positive mental health starts, is self-awareness.
There's a lot of talk about growth. You mentioned it earlier. I mentioned it earlier, growth mindset. There's this ideology that you should always commit time to a growth mindset. You should always be looking at positives, and you should always be looking at training and challenging something new and looking forward. Do we always need to be growing? Do we always need to be doing growth mindset? Or do we sometimes just need to stand still and reflect? Or,
in my opinion, okay, it might be controversial, who cares? If you're happy, you know, fixed mindset, growth mindset, doesn't really matter. Yeah, again, you can read all the theory and people will say you must have a growth mindset, you know, to evolve, to be better, to live your life happy. And it's not a rule. To have a growth mindset is the belief that you are able to change. You know, in its simplest form, it's about the inner belief that you can and are able to change positively. A fixed mindset is more a belief around, I can't change. If you're living a life that is happy with a fixed mindset, who are we to say you must have a growth mindset? Having a growth mindset is challenging as well, because growth only happens outside of our comfort zone. And as I've just said, when we're outside of our comfort zone, our mind just goes, whoa, hang on a minute. I don't like discomfort. I don't like what's happening. I don't like uncertainty. So living in a growth mindset comes with its own challenges as well. But I don't think anyone can dictate or demand that we should be one or the other. I think we're all a mixture of everything. There's some things that we think, I've reached my limit, I'm pretty fixed where I am in this space, but actually there's another space where I'm really keen and eager and want to push myself and I want to grow. And I think we all, again, I keep coming back to this, if we know our own reality, if we know where we are in our own mind, what pushes us, what drives us, what helps us to thrive, what challenges us, if we know how we impact others, then we're living in our own reality and we can challenge that reality ourselves. But I guess I would say, don't let the social world out there tell us what we should or what we have to do or how we have to be.
We talk a lot in Farmstrong about the 5 steps to well-being, you know, exercise being one of them, getting out and about, things like connecting with people, volunteering, giving your time. It all fundamentally, we're all trying to improve well-being and ensure that if you're feeling strong, you're going to be in a better position for your business or for your family or day to day. So what can we do to improve our well-being that supports our mindset, or vice versa? What can we do to our mindset to help our well-being?
That's such a wide question. Any of us could get on Google and come up with all the basics. We know the basics. the three fundamentals that we absolutely have to have in place: eat well, sleep well, take exercise. And I know at my darkest moments, it was actually the exercise that saved me. I'd completely poo-pooed the whole thing about exercise until I suffered with depression. And then it was, tried it myself, and it was a bit of a revelation. So I'm very much about those basics three. If you're not doing any of those three, then that has to be first. You know, whether we feel okay, whether we feel very low, or whether we feel great, if we can maintain those three, eat well, sleep well, take exercise. And if you get those fundamentals going, you've got half a chance. One of the other points I think that I discuss a lot with clients as well is similar to the point I've made already about the rest of the world that is out there is constantly trying to tell you, try this, try that, use this, use that. There's an app, breathe well, do mindfulness, paint, find another hobby, do all these hundreds of millions of things that is going to help your well-being. It's pretty overwhelming when you see the number of suggestions out there in the world. For me, it's about finding your thing. It's about finding what makes you happy. And again, it comes back to knowing yourself, knowing what helps you thrive, surrounding yourself with people who, we talk about radiators and drains. Surround yourself with people who are radiators. Yeah, you bounce off them, you get your energy from them, you feel good around them, and less so with the drains, those people who suck your energy. So really surround yourself with good people. I would say get to know your thinking. Mindset, you know, I'm calling it the language we think. There's things that we do every single day. And I wasn't aware of this until, you know, I did my training. I was like, holy moly, I'm doing this stuff every single day. In psychotherapy, we call it thought distortions. We do things like catastrophizing. You know, someone walks past us in the street and they don't say hello. And all of a sudden, I've done something terrible. They're not speaking to me. What have I done wrong? They obviously hate me. And we go all down the road. We fortune tell, we mind read, we overgeneralize, we use demanding language like I have to, I must, I should. And all of these different thought distortions don't support positive thinking. Yeah, and it's what happens when we come to our own conclusions because of our feelings. So this is the sort of fundamentals of cognitive behavioral therapy. We call it the ABCs. Yeah, something happens. There's an action. There's a trigger. There's an event. And we feel something. Yeah, and we believe something as a result of that feeling. And then there's a consequence. So we call it the ABCs. But if we can catch those thoughts, so someone passes us on the street and doesn't say hello, if we can catch the thought of, oh, they obviously hate me, and think about, well, what's the reality here? What might an alternative be? They've obviously either not seen me or they're in their own world thinking about something else. Maybe I'll get in touch and say, oh, I saw you in the street. Is everything okay? You walked past me, you know, instead of that catastrophizing that leads you down a negative path. So there's the moments we have in our life about recognizing this is a really difficult moment and it's okay to sit in this moment, compared to this is a difficult moment that my mind is actually creating itself because it's jumping to a conclusion that isn't based in reality, that isn't based in fact.
So how do you train or encourage yourself to have that habit that, you know, somebody walks past the street and instead of thinking negatively, you immediately think, oh, maybe they were just busy or they didn't see me. How do you stop the brain jumping to that negative? You know, on farms, we see it all the time, a sheep that's refusing to play ball during lambing and it's the devil incarnation and that sheep's going. But actually, she could be the best performing you that you've got in the flock, but you immediately jump to the negative. How do you stop that happening?
If we were to have a checklist, number one is you have to notice it's happening. I didn't notice it was happening until I knew what thought distortions were, you know, and there's 12. And I was like, hang on a minute. How could I not have noticed I was doing all of these things? And all this stuff's available on our website as well for free. And when I started looking down this list, I'm going, I'm doing this stuff all the time. When you understand that you do these things, that's when you start noticing it. You have a thought and you're like, I'm catastrophizing or I'm mind reading. Yeah, I'm putting my thoughts into someone else's head and just deciding. There's things like black and white thinking. Oh, I'm on a diet. I've had a cake. Well, that's it. That's the entire thing ruined. I'll have to have the whole box now because it doesn't matter. You know, it's thinking like that, that when we catch it, it allows us to then go, whoa, wait a minute, what's the reality? What's the truth here? Again, a phrase that I use often in my own mind is the story I'm making up is. Yeah? And when we start, you know, again, we link it to that example you gave here. The story I'm making up is this you here is absolutely useless. It's out, it's no good. When actually, no, it's just been a little bit difficult. It's probably all going to be okay. And it could actually be the best performing. But this moment here is challenging. Okay, I'm just going to acknowledge that. This is a challenging moment rather than the catastrophe that all hell has broken loose and it's all terrible. So when we understand these sort of 12 different ways of thinking, we can start to spot it. We can start to assess the reality, the truth, and we can make a different choice. We can choose to think a different way.
There's a gentleman called Mark Gascoigne who came over from New Zealand to talk to Scotland Grow a couple of years ago. And he talked about the fence post. I don't know if you've heard this, but he used to walk past this fence post that was broken every single day. And every single day he'd get really upset and frustrated by this bench post. And then one day he went and fixed it. But he changed the narrative in his brain from the broken fence post to, oh, it's a fence post that needs fixing and some positivity, fix it. And now every day he walks past with pride and smiles that he fixed the fence post. But we get so overwhelmed by having so much to do on farm that one small thing like a fence post can accelerate in our brain the negative mindset. So how do you manage that as well? The overwhelming sense that there's just so much to do that can then negatively impact your mind.
Yeah, I recognise that, absolutely. A couple of tools. The one that comes to mind first is what we call the power of one. And it's that sense that your to-do list will never be complete. So we have to reframe that in our minds, first of all. It will never be at zero. You will never tick off every single thing that needs to be done. We need to acknowledge that. We need to accept that. And it's almost like a bit of a realization there. And even I struggled with that. That's just so true. It will never be complete. Let's acknowledge that. And the power of one is about what can you do today in the next hour? What can you do tomorrow? What can you do next week? So what is possible in the short term rather than the constant, my to-do list is like this, I have to get it all finished. And again, if you think of that language that I just said there, it's one of the thought distortions. I must, I have to. So when we demand things of ourselves, we're using language in our own head, our own mindset, that is very fixed, isn't it? So when we can change that language to the next thing on my list is, and I can do that, and that's the one thing. Ultimately, if you think of it like a ladder, we always talk about this in terms of a ladder. You never try to jump to the top rung of the ladder. So we can never jump and do everything on our to-do list. It's what's the next thing. We complete that next thing. We get a little hit of dopamine. And our body goes, oh, that was good. I got that done. What's the next thing? And we just keep going with those one goal at a time. When we do that, we start to see, well, the to-do list isn't getting any smaller, but actually look at what I've achieved rather than what I've still to achieve. I think you mentioned the word reflection earlier as well. So a lot of a healthy mindset, it is about reflection. It is about looking at positives and looking at what you have achieved rather than always looking forward at what you haven't.
I think it's really interesting, Kirsty. One of the ladies that we spoke to on the podcast, Isla McKenzie, she is a Formula One mechanic, also a farmer's daughter, and just incredible to chat to her. But she has a notepad by her bed, and before she goes to bed every night, she writes down 10 things that have been really positive that day that just give her that really great framing before she goes to sleep. Is there any tips like that that you can recommend, just short, small things that people can do?
So I like that idea of the notepad. So I use that in a slightly different way, in that when you talk about that overwhelm where your mind is consumed by the to-do list, by the million things, there's always something that before we go to bed, we're thinking, oh, I have to remember. Yeah. So there's this science, and I'm by no means a scientist. There's a science that tells us if we go to bed trying to remember something, our body will wake us up every 2 to 4 hours to remember that thing. So I use, whether it's on my phone or a little notepad, when that something pops into my head, while I'm lying back and just trying to sleep and go, I must remember that tomorrow, I actually physically get up and write it down. And that process of writing it down takes it out of that I must remember and out of that signal to your brain to wake up and remember because it's written down. So I love that tip. It works for me.
It explains things like when I forgot to put the bins out, my brain keeps waking up during the night. It's the smallest trivial things that normally trigger a reaction.
Yeah, it is. And I find that no matter how many times I try to not do it, I find that I can't. I have to write it down, and then it just triggers something that allows my brain to go, okay, you can sleep now.
You mentioned earlier there's 12 distortions. Run through the 12 for us if you can remember them all.
I can remember about 6 or 7. So you've got catastrophizing. So that's taking what might be a simple event and, let's say, blowing it out of proportion. And we tend to know when we've sort of irrationally blown it out of proportion. There's black and white thinking. So that was my example about I'm on a diet, I eat a cake, that's it, it's all over, rather than, well, tomorrow's another day. There is the demanding language that I mentioned. So that's I should, I must, I have to. There is labelling. So we label ourselves, we label others. But when we label, it might be something like, oh, I'm just no good. When we label ourselves, we avoid space for alternatives. We're sort of badging something as, well, what often is a negative. Yeah. And as soon as we label something, again, we've decided in our mind, that's what it is. Overgeneralizing, or take lots of things and we generalize it as one. Yeah. So one or two things happen and then all of a sudden that just encompasses the world. And some of these are all linked together. So we catastrophize. And the next thing is fortune telling, which is very closely linked with mind reading, where we're predicting a future that we can't. He thinks, she thinks, oh, they must be thinking. I didn't realise how often we do that, how often I've done that. There's another one around what we call low tolerance threshold. So where we start to tell ourselves that everything is terrible, everything is awful. And again, as soon as we tell ourselves that, well, it's more likely to be, because we're actually telling our mind what to think. You've caught me now in terms of, I don't know how many that was.
I think you're doing amazing considering how many that covered off. It's really interesting hearing about the different mindsets, different approaches. So if I threw some negatives at you, what would be the positive that you'd come back with?
In terms of reframing it? Or?
Yeah, in terms of reframing it, because when I was doing some research before we spoke, reframing seems to be quite a big part of improving your well-being. So if it's raining, I can't get anything done on the farm, how do you reframe that?
I am always reminded by Billy Connolly's quote, there's no such thing as bad weather, only the wrong clothes. That might not have been the exact words, but it was definitely something along those lines.
That might be the podcast title, you never know. That's another lamb I've lost this season.
I guess for that, the challenge there is that could be devastating. You know, depending on the circumstances, that could be devastating. And if I was their therapist, you know, I'd be saying, sit with that, mourn that loss and allow yourself a moment and then consider what is now in my control. You know, you can't always control these things that happen on the farm, but it's thinking about this has happened. I couldn't control it. What can I control? And it's about reframing to focus on what you can control going forward.
A member of the team who was supposed to be covering my holiday is taken sick and I now can't get off the farm for the day.
That's a challenge, that one. I guess for me, the reframing there would be, again, sit with, this is annoying. However, it now gives me the opportunity to get a favour back in the future.
I think we could clock up some favours. I like the sound of this. What about something like, I planted a crop of wheat, but it hasn't established very well, or I'm not overly happy with the final outcome?
I guess for me in that, these are massive sort of challenges, aren't they? These aren't just small everyday, there's stuff going on that we accept as part of our day-to-day. For that, I'd probably be thinking along the lines of, how would I support someone to think, are there alternatives? You know, what might alternatives going forward be? You know, challenge them to think, do I need to cut my losses? Is this something that I need to have a big change? Is it an opportunity? Do we see failure as opportunities? Because again, part of a mindset is we see failure as failure. And that's when that labelling can sometimes come in. You know, that crop isn't doing well, I am a failure. Yeah, rather than the crop failed. Yeah, and it's about seeing the reality, seeing the truth. You are not a failure, the crop failed. Those are two very, very different things. So I would be helping them to see as the fact, as the reality, and then to ask what are the opportunities.
I think it's really interesting, quite often that failure piece, it doesn't matter what industry you're in, whether it's farming and crofting or beyond, we jump to the conclusion that we're the problem, that we're the result of that failure, when actually you're right. If you took the emotion out of it and you just looked at it factually, what is the fact? It immediately reframes that mindset.
An example of that is I frequently, more than you would ever believe, have clients who say, I'm just an anxious person. It's one of the first pieces of work that I do with someone is say, let's think about how you talk about yourself in that way. You know, I'm such an anxious person. What's that telling yourself about yourself? It's that labeling, isn't it? So, you know, I'd be challenging them to think, what might an alternative way to think? How would you phrase that? You know, go from I'm an anxious person to I suffer from anxiety sometimes. It's a very different way in our own mind. Again, this whole concept in my mind is the language we think. So the language we think sets our intentions, sets our behaviours. And if you're spending day in, day out thinking, I'm an anxious person, you're going to be anxious most of the time because you're actually telling your mind that that's who you are, what you are. And as soon as we start to think, this is something that defines me, we can start to go on quite a challenging path. So this labelling one is a really tricky one.
Yeah, sounds it. Earlier on, you talked about as part of that labelling and different tools, mindfulness tools, and there's all these things that, as I said earlier, I was doing some research for this, and suddenly my Facebook page and social media pages are full of pop-ups on all these apps that you can do for mindfulness.
Yeah.
Is the things that you recommend for your clients to start the day to put you in that right space? I know you mentioned exercise and eat, but you've got people doing yoga and you've got people who do sit and just meditate. Are there things, Kirsty, you recommend?
Oh, mindfulness. Mindfulness first sort of came to us and became very much mainstream. We talk about it every day now, the mindfulness in various different ways. It made me think a lot about what mindful is to different people. Mindfulness to me is very different to what it is to you. You know, some people find meditation mindful. Some people find it in yoga. If I lived on a farm, I would find it in my cup of coffee in the morning, sitting outside in noise of nature. I don't get that in the city. You know, it's one of the things that I would absolutely love. That's my mindful moment, is to be able to sit for 15 minutes and just have one cup of coffee with no distractions, no interruptions, and be able to feel that peace and be in my own thoughts. I also have one of the things, third act, was to learn piano. And I've wanted to do it for, well, decades. And even that, for me, is mindful. It's about losing yourself in something that brings you peace, that brings you a sense of self, sense of joy, a sense of being in the moment. And that is essentially what mindfulness is. It's about being in a moment. I also do painting by numbers, so for adults, not for kids. Although sometimes I think it maybe should be the kids' versions. And again, it's just fully immersing yourself in an activity that brings you that sense of bringing all of your senses into that moment rather than the constant putting our minds elsewhere. So again, I would say find what works for you. Find an activity that brings that for you. And it's not going to be the same for everyone. Not everyone wants to sit, you know, cross-legged and, you know, in that sort of full meditative state. It's not really for me. I find it in different ways. And that's what I encourage, is find your way, something that you connect with that works for you.
It's so true. I'm not a meditator. I'm not a yoga person, but I will sit in the morning and watch the birds outside on the farm and just for 10 minutes, just see how many different species of birds I can spot. But in that 10 minutes, there's nothing else going on. It's just that peace and quiet. And it's amazing how it can set me up the day. When I don't do it, I really notice that I've missed that 10 minutes of my own headspace and my own thinking to give yourself a bit of time to reflect in such a busy life. But I wonder, we advocate so often for people getting off farm, and it's certainly a really core message of improving your well-being and taking that time. But just noticing the small things around you on farm is just as powerful, maybe, for your mind.
I absolutely agree. And I think it's almost that careful what you wish for. For those of us who don't live in that nature and that environment, it's what we long for, to be able to go outside and peace and sense of nature around us. And I'm quite lucky, you know, I live at the edge of the city. You know, I've got lots and lots of green. You know, I just need to walk 5 minutes and I'm forests and greenery and all the rest, which is amazing. And I'm from the borders as well, so I'm used to sort of more rural. But it is a sense of careful what you wish for. And always looking over the fence at what others have instead of looking at what you have and what's possible. Again, it's, you know, something I encourage so much with clients is to start each day with what feels possible today. So not setting our expectations way up here. I must, I have to, you know, all this demanding perfection of ourselves is to get up each day and say, what feels possible today? What can I achieve today without demanding too much of ourselves?
Reframing that. Instead of saying I must, what should we be saying?
I guess it depends on the circumstances. I'm trying to think of an example. And if you can think of one, please do. So if you think about, you know, maybe there's big long to-do list and you're starting this morning saying, I have to be able to get all this done today. Is, you know, I would say that, what's possible today? How am I going to set my expectations today? Or what's the top three things that must be complete? You know, there's going to be consequences if three things don't get done. You know, are there opportunities to set my expectations a bit lower today? So there's just lots of different ways. And again, it's a bit of a practice, this one. Again, we have to catch that language, you know. And one of the things I did laugh with one client because we laughed about the number of times they said, I need to. And every time they said, I need to, I challenged it and said, do you need to? Well, I'm not sure if I need to. Well, how could we reframe I need to into maybe I want to? I need to do exercise. I want to do exercise today. That's what's going to make me happy. I need to get the car washed or the tractor washed or, you know, whatever it is. Well, do I need to do it or is it something that I feel is necessary or not? So it's just finding ways to change that language in our own head that changes our outlook.
It's really interesting and it's been a fascinating conversation, Kirsty. I've already thought, how many times have I said a negative, unintentional phrase in my head today and reframing it? But what keeps you so positive? What gets you out of bed in this morning and going to bed with that smile and that positivity?
I guess it's purpose. For me, it's getting up and feeling useful and knowing that the work I do really matters. You know, that there's people out there that I have the ability to help. So that definitely pushes me day to day. But yeah, I guess I suppose that in terms of mindset, a lot of the time it comes from how you grew up. You know, we don't necessarily have a choice about our mindset when we're younger because it's affected by our parents, our grandparents, our siblings, where we grew up, education, our teachers, all of that. And it's only when we become adults that we actually have some control and some power over our own mindset, how we go forward. I know that I know myself now, and that makes me feel positive because I know what I like, I know what helps me to thrive, I know what drags me down, I know what to avoid. And when you know that, you can make decisions and choices that help you. You don't always get it right, but even when you get it wrong, you can laugh about it and go, wow, epic. But, you know, what's next? Turn around and go in a different direction. You know, I never thought, you know, 25 years as an accountant, I would retrain and become a psychotherapist. You know, when I cast my mind back, if I told my younger self that, there's no chance I would have envisaged that. So, you know, every day is learning for me, and that's what I love.
Oh, thank you so much, Kirsty, and for giving me all of your time today to chat about mindset. And for those that are listening and watching, we'll encourage them to go to the Mind Emission website to find all your amazing resources. Thank you for all your time.
You're very welcome. Very welcome indeed.
We hope you enjoyed today's blether and it has provided some inspiration for your own well-being. One small step can make a big impact. Find something that works for you. To read our latest stories and news, download our resources and tools, or connect with Farmstrong Scotland, visit our website, allthews.farmstrongscotland.org.uk, or follow us on social media.